she wasn't Annabeth. She wasn't so good at devising plans on the fly. She needed time to think.
"What about Leo?" she blurted. "Where did you send him?"
The snow goddess stepped lightly around Jason, examining him as if he were sidewalk art.
"Leo Valdez deserved a special punishment," she said. "I have sent him to a place from which he can never return."
Piper couldn't breathe. Poor Leo. The idea of never seeing him again almost destroyed her. Keone must have seen it in her face.
"Alas, my dear Piper,"
she smiled in triumph.
"But it is for the best. Leo could not be tolerated, even as an ice statue. Not after he insulted me. The fool refused to rule at my side. And his power over fire."
She shook her head.
"He could not be allowed to reach the House of Hades. I'm afraid Lord Clytius likes fire even less than I do."
Piper gripped her dagger. "Fire," she thought. "Thanks for reminding me, you witch." She scanned the deck. How to make fire? A box of Greek fire vials was secured by the forward ballista, but that was too far away. Even if she made it without getting frozen, Greek fire would burn everything, including the ship and all her friends. There had to be another way. Her eyes strayed to the prow. Oh. Festus, the figurehead, could blow some serious flames. Unfortunately, Leo had switched him off. Piper had no idea how to reactivate him. She would never have time to figure out the right controls at the ship's console. She had vague memories of Leo tinkering around inside the dragon's bronze skull, mumbling about a control disc. But even if Piper could make it to the prow, she would have no idea what she was doing. Still, some instinct told her Festus was her best chance. If only she could figure out how to convince her captors to let her get close enough.
"Well," Keone interrupted her thoughts, "I fear our time together is at a close. Zethys, if you would."
"Wait,"
Piper said. A simple command, and it worked. The Boreads and Keone frowned at her, waiting. Piper was fairly sure she could control the brothers with Charmspeak, but Keone was a problem. Charmspeak worked poorly if the person wasn't attracted to you. It worked poorly on a powerful being like a god. And it worked poorly when your victim knew about Charmspeak and was actively on guard against it. All of the above applied to Keone.
What would Annabeth do?
Delay, Piper thought. When in doubt, talk some more. "You're afraid of my friends," she said. "So why not just kill them?" Keone laughed.
"You are not a god, or you would understand. Death is so short, so unsatisfying. Your puny mortal souls flit off to the underworld. And what happens then? The best I can hope for is that you go to the Fields of Punishment or Asphodel. But you demigods are insufferably noble. More likely you will go to Elysium, or get reborn in a new life. Why would I want to reward your friends that way? Why? When I can punish them eternally."
"And me?"
Piper hated to ask. "Why am I still alive and unfrozen?" Keone glanced at her brothers with annoyance.
"Zethys has claimed you for one thing."
"I kiss magnificently," Zethys promised.
"You will see, beautiful one."
The idea made Piper's stomach churn.
"But that is not the only reason," Keone said. "It is because I hate you, Piper. deeply and truly. Without you, Jason would have stayed with me in Quebec.
Delusional much? Keone's eyes turned as hard as the diamonds in her circlet.
You are a meddler, the daughter of a useless goddess. What can you do alone? Nothing. Of all the seven demigods, you have no purpose, no power. I wish you to stay on this ship, adrift and helpless, while G arises and the world ends. And just to be sure you are well out of the way.
She gestured to Zethys, who plucked something from the air, a frozen sphere the size of a softball, covered in icy spikes.
A bomb, Zethys explained. Especially for you, my love.
Bombs! Cal laughed. A good day. Bombs and muffins.
Piper lowered her dagger, which seemed even more useless than usual. Flowers would have been fine.
Oh, it will not kill the pretty girl,
Zethys frowned.
Well, I am fairly sure of this. But when the fragile container cracks, in, roughly not very long, it will unleash the full force of the northern winds. This ship will be blown very far off course. Very, very far.
Indeed.
Keone's voice prickled with false sympathy.
We will take your friends for our statue collection, then unleash the winds and bid you goodbye. You can watch the end of the world from, well, the end of the world. Perhaps you can charm speak the fish and feed yourself with your silly cornucopia. You can pace the deck of this empty ship and watch our victory in the blade of your dagger. When Gia has arisen and the world you knew is dead, then Zethys can come back and retrieve you for his bride. What will you do to stop us, Piper? A hero? Ha! You are a joke.
Her words stung like sleet, mostly because Piper had had the same thoughts herself. What could she do? How could she save her friends with what she had? She came close to snapping, flying at her enemies in a rage and getting herself killed. She looked at Keone's smug expression, and she realized the goddess was hoping for that. She wanted Piper to break. She wanted entertainment. Piper's spine turned to steel. She remembered the girls who used to make fun of her at the wilderness school. She remembered Drew, the cruel head counselor she had replaced in Aphrodite's cabin, and Medea, who had charmed Jason and Leo in Chicago, and Jessica, her dad's old assistant, who had always treated her like a useless brat. All her life, Piper had been looked down upon, told she was useless.
It has never been true, another voice whispered,
a voice that sounded like her mother's.
Each of them berated you because they feared you and envied you. So does Keone. Use that.
Piper didn't feel like it, but she managed a laugh. She tried it again, and the laughter came more easily. Soon, she was doubled over, giggling and snorting. Calais joined in until Zethys elbowed him. Keone's smile wavered.
What? What is so funny? I have doomed you.
Doomed me? Piper laughed again. Oh, gods, sorry. She took a shaky breath and tried to stop giggling.
Oh, boy. Okay. You really think I'm powerless? You really think I'm useless? Gods of Olympus, your brain must have freezer burn. You don't know my secret, do you?
Keone's eyes narrowed.
You have no secret, she said. You are lying.
Okay, whatever, Piper said. Yeah, go ahead and take my friends. Leave me here. Useless. She snorted. Yeah, Gia will be really pleased with you.
Snow swirled around the goddess. Xethys and Calais glanced at each other nervously.
Sister, Xethys said, if she really has some secret...
Pizza?
Cal speculated.
Hockey?
Then we must know,
Xethys continued. Keone obviously didn't buy it. Piper tried to keep a straight face, but she made her eyes dance with mischief and humor.
Go ahead, she dared. Call my bluff.
What secret?
Keone demanded.
Reveal it to us.
Piper shrugged.
Suit yourself.
She pointed casually toward the prow. Follow me, ice people. Chapter 44. Piper. She pushed between the Boreads, which was like walking through a meat freezer. The air around them was so cold it burned her face. She felt like she was breathing pure snow. Piper tried not to look down at Jason's frozen body as she passed. She tried not to think about her friends below, or Leo, shot into the sky to a place of no return. She definitely tried not to think about the Boreads and the Snow Goddess who were following her. She fixed her eyes on the figurehead. The ship rocked under her feet. A single gust of summer air made it through the chill, and Piper breathed it in, taking it as a good omen. It was still summer out there. Keone and her brothers did not belong here. Piper knew she couldn't win a straight fight against Keone and two winged guys with swords. She wasn't as clever as Annabeth, or as good at problem-solving as Leo. But she did have power, and she intended to use it. Last night, during her talk with Hazel, Piper had realized that the secret of Charmspeak was a lot like using the mist. In the past, Piper had had a lot of trouble making her charms work because she always ordered her enemies to do what she wanted. She would yell, "Don't kill us," when the monster's fondest wish was to kill them. She would put all her power into her voice and hope it was enough to overwhelm her enemy's will. Sometimes it worked, but it was exhausting and unreliable. Aphrodite wasn't about head-on confrontation. Aphrodite was about subtlety and guile and charm. Piper decided she shouldn't focus on making people do what she wanted. She needed to push them to do the things they wanted. A great theory, if she could make it work. She stopped at the foremast and faced Keone.
Wow, I just realized why you hate us so much, she said, filling her voice with pity. We humiliated you pretty badly in Sonoma.
Keone's eyes glinted like iced espresso. She shot an uneasy look at her brothers. Piper laughed.
Oh, you didn't tell them, she guessed.
I don't blame you. You had a giant king on your side, plus an army of wolves and earthborn, and you still couldn't beat us.
Silence,
the goddess hissed. The air turned misty. Piper felt frost gathering on her eyebrows and freezing her ear canals, but she feigned a smile.
Whatever.
She winked at Xethys, but it was pretty funny.
The beautiful girl must be lying, Xethys said. Keone was not beaten at the wolf house. She said it was what is the term? A tactical retreat.
Treats?
Cal asked.
Treats are good.
Piper pushed the big guy's chest playfully.
No, Cal. He means that your sister ran away.
I did not,
Keone shrieked.
What did Hera call you?
Piper mused.
Right, a D-list goddess.
She burst out laughing again, and her amusement was so genuine, Zethys and Cal started laughing too.
That is très bon, Zethys said. A D-list goddess. Ha!
Ha!
Cal said. Sister ran away. Ha!
Keone's white dress began to steam. Ice formed over Zethys and Cal's mouths, plugging them up.
Show us this secret of yours, Piper McLean,
Keone growled.
Then pray I leave you on this ship intact. If you are toying with us, I will show you the horrors of frostbite. I doubt Zethys will still want you if you have no fingers or toes. Perhaps no nose or ears.
Zethys and Cal spit the ice plugs out of their mouths.
The pretty girl would look less pretty without a nose, Zethys admitted.
Piper had seen pictures of frostbite victims. The threat terrified her, but she didn't let it show. Come on, then. She led the way to the prow, humming one of her dad's favorite songs, Summertime. When she got to the figurehead, she put her hand on Festus's neck. His bronze scales were cold. There was no hum of machinery. His ruby eyes were dull and dark.
You remember our dragon?
Piper asked. Keone scoffed.
This cannot be your secret. The dragon is broken. Its fire is gone.
Well, yes, Piper stroked the dragon's snout. She didn't have Leo's power to make gears turn or circuits spark. She couldn't sense anything about the workings of a machine. All she could do was speak her heart and tell the dragon what he most wanted to hear.
But Festus is more than a machine. He's a living creature.
Ridiculous, the goddess spat. Zethys, Cal, gather the frozen demigods from below. Then we shall break open the sphere of winds.
You could do that, boys, Piper agreed. But then you wouldn't see Keone humiliated. I know you'd like that.
The Boreads hesitated.
Hockey?
Cal asked. Almost as good, Piper promised. You fought at the side of Jason and the Argonauts, didn't you? On a ship like this, the first Argo.
Yes, Zethys agreed. The Argo, much like this, but we did not have a dragon. Don't listen to her, Keone snapped.
Piper felt ice forming on her lips.
You could shut me up, she said quickly, but you want to know my secret power, how I will destroy you, Angia, and the giants.
Hatred seethed in Keone's eyes, but she withheld her frost.
You have no power, she insisted.
Spoken like a D-list goddess, Piper said. One who never gets taken seriously, who always wants more power. She turned to Festus and ran her hand behind his metal ears.
You're a good friend, Festus. No one can truly deactivate you. You're more than a machine. Keone doesn't understand that.
She turned to the Boreads. She doesn't value you either, you know. She thinks she can boss you around because you're demigods, not full-fledged gods. She doesn't understand that you're a powerful team.
A team, Cal grunted. Like the Canadians.
He had to struggle with the word since it was more than two syllables. He grinned and looked very pleased with himself.
Exactly, Piper said. Just like a hockey team. The whole is greater than the parts.
Like a pizza, Cal added.
Piper laughed.
You are smart, Cal. Even I underestimated you.
Wait now, Zethys protested. I am smart also, and good-looking.
Very smart, Piper agreed, ignoring the good-looking part. So put down the wind bomb and watch Keone get humiliated.
Zethys grinned. He crouched and rolled the ice sphere across the deck.
You fool! Keone yelled.
Before the goddess could go after the sphere, Piper cried, Our secret weapon, Keone! We're not just a bunch of demigods. We're a team. Just like Festus isn't only a collection of parts. He's alive. He's my friend. And when his friends are in trouble, especially Leo, he can wake up on his own.
She willed all her confidence into her voice, all her love for the metal dragon and everything he'd done for them. The rational part of her knew this was hopeless. How could you start a machine with emotions? But Aphrodite wasn't rational. She ruled through emotions. She was the oldest and most primordial of the Olympians, born from the blood of Uranos churning in the sea. Her power was more ancient than that of Hephaestus or Athena, or even Zeus. For a terrible moment, nothing happened. Keone glared at her. The Boreads began to come out of their daze, looking disappointed.
Never mind our plan, Keone snarled. Kill her!
As the Boreads raised their swords, the dragon's metal skin grew warm under Piper's hand. She dove out of the way, tackling the snow goddess, as Festus turned his head 180 degrees and blasted the Boreads, vaporizing them on the spot. For some reason, Zethys's sword was spared. It clunked to the deck, still steaming. Piper scrambled to her feet. She spotted the sphere of winds at the base of the foremast. She ran for it, but before she could get close, Keone materialized in front of her in a swirl of frost. Her skin glowed bright enough to cause snow blindness.
You miserable girl, she hissed. You think you can defeat me, a goddess?
At Piper's back, Festus roared and blew steam, but Piper knew he couldn't breathe fire again without hitting her, too. About 20 feet behind the goddess, the ice sphere began to crack and hiss. Piper was out of time for subtlety. She yelled and raised her dagger, charging the goddess. Keone grabbed her wrist. Ice spread over Piper's arm. The blade of Catoptris turned white. The goddess's face was only 6 inches from hers. Keone smiled, knowing she had won.
A child of Aphrodite, she chided. You are nothing.
Festus creaked again. Piper could swear he was trying to shout encouragement. Suddenly her chest grew warm, not with anger or fear, but with love for that dragon, and Jason, who was depending on her, and her friends trapped below, and Leo, who was lost and would need her help. Maybe love was no match for ice, but Piper had used it to wake a metal dragon. Mortals did superhuman feats in the name of love all the time. Mothers lifted cars to save their children. And Piper was more than just mortal. She was a demigod. A hero. The ice melted on her blade. Her arm steamed under Keone's grip.
Still underestimating me, Piper told the goddess. You really need to work on that.
Keone's smug expression faltered as Piper drove her dagger straight down. The blade touched Keone's chest, and the goddess exploded in a miniature blizzard. Piper collapsed, dazed from the cold. She heard Festus clacking and whirring, the reactivated alarm bells ringing. The bomb. Piper struggled to rise. The sphere was 10 feet away.
hissing and spinning as the winds inside began to stir. Piper dove for it. Her fingers closed around the bomb just as the ice shattered and the winds exploded. Chapter 45. Percy. Percy felt homesick for the swamp. He never thought he'd miss sleeping in a giant's leather bed in a drakenbone hut in a festering cesspool, but right now, that sounded like Elysium. He and Annabeth and Bob stumbled along in the darkness, the air thick and cold, the ground alternating patches of pointy rocks and pools of muck. The terrain seemed to be designed so that Percy could never let his guard down. Even walking 10 feet was exhausting. Percy had started out from the giant's hut feeling strong again, his head clear, his belly full of draken jerky from their packs of provisions. Now his legs were sore. Every muscle ached. He pulled a makeshift tunic of draken leather over his shredded t-shirt, but it did nothing to keep out the chill. His focus narrowed to the ground in front of him. Nothing existed except for that and Annabeth at his side. Whenever he felt like giving up, plopping himself down and dying, which was like every 10 minutes, he reached over and took her hand, just to remember there was warmth in the world. After Annabeth's talk with Damison, Percy was worried about her. Annabeth didn't give in to despair easily, but as they walked, she wiped tears from her eyes, trying not to let Percy see. He knew she hated it when her plans didn't work out. She was convinced they needed Damison's help, but the giant had turned them down. Part of Percy was relieved. He was concerned enough about Bob's staying on their side once they reached the doors of death. He wasn't sure he wanted a giant as his wingman, even if that giant could cook a mean bowl of stew. He wondered what had happened after they left Damison's hut. He hadn't heard their pursuers in hours, but he could sense their hatred, especially Polybides's. That giant was back there somewhere, following, pushing them deeper into Tartarus. Percy tried to think of good things to keep his spirits up. The lake at Camp Half-Blood, the time he'd kissed Annabeth underwater. He tried to imagine the two of them at New Rome together, walking through the hills and holding hands. But Camp Jupiter and Camp Half-Blood both seemed like dreams. He felt as if only Tartarus existed. This was the real world. Death, darkness, cold, pain. He'd been imagining all the rest. He shivered. No. That was the pit speaking to him, sapping his resolve. He wondered how Nico had survived down here alone without going insane. That kid had more strength than Percy had given him credit for. The deeper they traveled, the harder it became to stay focused. "This place is worse than the River Cocytus," he muttered. "Yes," Bob called back happily. "Much worse. It means we are close." Close to what? Percy wondered. But he didn't have the strength to ask. He noticed small Bob the cat had hidden himself in Bob's coveralls again, which reinforced Percy's opinion that the kitten was the smartest one in their group. Annabeth laced her fingers through his. In the light of his bronze sword, her face was beautiful. "We're together," she reminded him. "We'll get through this." He'd been so worried about lifting her spirits, and here she was reassuring him.
"Yeah," he agreed. "Piece of cake."
"But next time," she said, "I want to go somewhere different on a date."
"Paris was nice," he recalled.
She managed a smile. Months ago, before Percy got amnesia, they'd had dinner in Paris one night, compliments of Hermes.
That seemed like another lifetime.
I'd settle for New Rome, she offered, as long as you're there with me.
Man, Annabeth was awesome. For a moment, Percy actually remembered what it was like to feel happy. He had an amazing girlfriend. They could have a future together. Then, the darkness dispersed with a massive sigh, like the last breath of a dying god. In front of them was a clearing, a barren field of dust and stones. In the center, about 20 yards away, knelt the gruesome figure of a woman, her clothes tattered, her limbs emaciated, her skin leathery green. Her head was bent as she sobbed quietly, and the sound shattered all Percy's hopes. He realized that life was pointless. His struggles were for nothing. This woman cried as if mourning the death of the entire world.
"We're here," Bob announced. "Aklis can help."
Chapter 46. Percy. If the sobbing ghoul was Bob's idea of help, Percy was pretty sure he didn't want it. Nevertheless, Bob trudged forward. Percy felt obliged to follow. If nothing else, this area was less dark. Not exactly light, but with more of a soupy white fog.
"Aklis!" Bob called.
The creature raised her head, and Percy's stomach screamed, "Help me!" Her body was bad enough. She looked like the victim of a famine. Limbs like sticks, swollen knees and knobby elbows, rags for clothes, broken fingernails and toenails. Dust was caked on her skin and piled on her shoulders as if she'd taken a shower at the bottom of an hourglass. Her face was utter desolation. Her eyes were sunken and rheumy, pouring out tears. Her nose dripped like a waterfall. Her stringy gray hair was matted to her skull in greasy tufts, and her cheeks were raked and bleeding as if she'd been clawing herself. Percy couldn't stand to meet her eyes, so he lowered his gaze. Across her knees lay an ancient shield, a battered circle of wood and bronze, painted with the likeness of Aklis herself holding a shield, so the image seemed to go on forever, smaller and smaller.
"That shield," Annabeth murmured. "That's his. I thought it was just a story."
"Oh, no," the old hag wailed. "The shield of Hercules? He painted me on its surface so his enemies would see me in their final moments. The goddess of misery."
She coughed so hard it made Percy's chest hurt.
"As if Hercules knew true misery. It's not even a good likeness."
Percy gulped. When he and his friends had encountered Hercules at the Straits of Gibraltar, it hadn't gone well. The exchange had involved a lot of yelling, death threats, and high-velocity pineapples.
"What's his shield doing here?" Percy asked.
The goddess stared at him with her wet, milky eyes. Her cheeks dripped blood, making red polka dots on her tattered dress.
"He doesn't need it anymore, does he? It came here when his mortal body was burned. A reminder, I suppose, that no shield is sufficient. In the end, misery overtakes all of you. Even Hercules."
Percy inched closer to Annabeth. He tried to remember why they were here, but the sense of despair made it difficult to think. Hearing Aklis speak, he no longer found it strange that she had clawed her own cheeks. The goddess radiated pure pain.
"Bob," Percy said, "we shouldn't have come here."
From somewhere inside Bob's uniform, the skeleton kitten mewled in agreement.
The Titan shifted and winced as if Small Bob was clawing his armpit.
"Aklis controls the death mist," he insisted. "She can hide you."
"Hide them?"
Aklis made a gurgling sound. She was either laughing or choking to death.
"Why would I do that?"
"They must reach the doors of death," Bob said, "to return to the mortal world."
"Impossible," Aklis said. "The armies of Tartarus will find you. They will kill you."
Annabeth turned the blade of her dragonbone sword, which Percy had to admit made her look pretty intimidating and hot, in a barbarian princess kind of way.
"So I guess your death mist is pretty useless then," she said.
The goddess bared her broken yellow teeth.
"Useless? Who are you?"
"A daughter of Athena."
Annabeth's voice sounded brave, though how she did it, Percy didn't know.
"I didn't walk halfway across Tartarus to be told what's impossible by some minor goddess."
The dust quivered at their feet. Fog swirled around them with a sound like agonized wailing.
"Minor goddess?"
Aklis's gnarled fingernails dug into Hercules's shield, gouging the metal.
"I was old before the Titans were born, you ignorant girl. I was old when Gia first woke. Misery is eternal. Existence is misery. I was born of the eldest ones, of chaos and night. I was..."
"Yes, yes," Annabeth said. "Sadness and misery, blah, blah, blah. But you still don't have enough power to hide two demigods with your death mist. Like I said, useless."
Percy cleared his throat.
Annabeth?"
She flashed him a warning look.
"Work with me."
He realized how terrified she was, but she had no choice. This was their best shot at stirring the goddess into action.
"I mean, Annabeth is right," Percy volunteered. "Bob brought us all this way because he thought you could help. But I guess you're too busy staring at that shield and crying. I can't blame you. It looks just like you."
Aklis wailed and glared at the Titan.
"Why did you inflict these annoying children on me?"
Bob made a sound somewhere between a rumble and a whimper.
I thought...
"The death mist is not for helping," Aklis shrieked. "It shrouds mortals in misery as their souls pass into the underworld. It is the very breath of Tartarus, of death, of despair."
"Awesome," Percy said. "Could we get two orders of that to go?" Aklis hissed.
"Ask me for a more sensible gift. I am also the goddess of poisons. I could give you death, thousands of ways to die less painful than the one you have chosen by marching into the heart of the pit."
Around the goddess, flowers bloomed in the dust. Dark purple, orange, and red blossoms that smelled sickly sweet. Percy's head swam.
"Nightshade," Aklis offered. "Hemlock, belladonna, henbane, or strychnine. I can dissolve your innards, boil your blood."
"That's very nice of you," Percy said. "But I've had enough poison for one trip. Now, can you hide us in your death mist or not?"
"Yeah, it'll be fun," Annabeth said.
The goddess's eyes narrowed.
"Fun?"
"Sure," Annabeth promised. "If we fail, think how great it will be for you, gloating over our spirits when we die in agony. You'll get to say, 'I told you so,' for eternity."
"Or if we succeed," Percy added,
Think of all the suffering you'll bring to the monsters down here. We intend to seal the doors of death. That's going to cause a lot of wailing and moaning.
Aklis considered.
I enjoy suffering. Wailing is also good.
Well, then it's settled, Percy said. Make us invisible.
Aklis struggled to her feet. The shield of Hercules rolled away and wobbled to a stop in a patch of poison flowers.
It is not so simple, the goddess said. The death mist comes at the moment you are closest to your end. Your eyes will be clouded only then. The world will fade.
Percy's mouth felt dry.
Okay, but we'll be shrouded from the monsters?
Oh, yes, Aklis said. If you survive the process, you will be able to pass unnoticed among the armies of Tartarus. It is hopeless, of course, but if you are determined, then come. I will show you the way.
The way to where exactly? Annabeth asked. The goddess was already shuffling into the gloom. Percy turned to look at Bob, but the Titan was gone. How does a 10-foot-tall silver dude with a very loud kitten disappear?
Hey, Percy yelled to Aklis. Where's our friend?
He cannot take this path, the goddess called back. He is not mortal. Come, little fools. Come experience the death mist.
Annabeth exhaled and grabbed his hand.
Well, how bad can it be?
The question was so ridiculous, Percy laughed, even though it hurt his lungs.
Yeah. Next date, though? Dinner in New Rome.
They followed the goddess's dusty footprints through the poison flowers, deeper into the fog. Chapter 47. Percy. Percy missed Bob. He'd gotten used to having the Titan on his side, lighting their way with his silver hair and his fearsome war broom. Now, their only guide was an emaciated corpse lady with serious self-esteem issues. As they struggled across the dusty plain, the fog became so thick that Percy had to resist the urge to swat it away with his hands. The only reason he was able to follow Aklis's path was because poisonous plants sprang up wherever she walked. If they were still on the body of Tartarus, Percy figured they must be on the bottom of his foot, a rough, calloused expanse where only the most disgusting plant life grew. Finally, they arrived at the end of the big toe. At least, that's what it looked like to Percy. The fog dissipated, and they found themselves on a peninsula that jutted out over a pitch-black void.
Here we are.
Aklis turned and leered at them. Blood from her cheeks dripped on her dress. Her sickly eyes looked moist and swollen, but somehow excited. Can misery look excited?
Great, Percy asked. Where is here?
The verge of final death, Aklis said, where night meets the void below Tartarus.
Annabeth inched forward and peered over the cliff.
I thought there was nothing below Tartarus.
Oh, certainly there is.
Aklis coughed.
Even Tartarus had to rise from somewhere. This is the edge of the earliest darkness, which was my mother. Below lies the realm of chaos, my father. Here you are closer to nothingness than any mortal has ever been. Can you not feel it?
Percy knew what she meant. The void seemed to be pulling at him, leeching the breath from his lungs and the oxygen from his blood. He looked at Annabeth and saw that her lips were tinged blue.
We can't stay here, he said.
No, indeed,
Aklis said.
Don't you feel the death mist? Even now you pass between. Look.
White smoke gathered around Percy's feet. As it coiled up his legs, he realized the smoke wasn't surrounding him. It was coming from him. His whole body was dissolving. He held up his hands and found they were fuzzy and indistinct. He couldn't even tell how many fingers he had. Hopefully, still 10. He turned to Annabeth and stifled a yelp.
You're...
He couldn't say it. She looked dead. Her skin was sallow, her eye sockets dark and sunken. Her beautiful hair had dried into a skein of cobwebs. She looked like she'd been stuck in a cool, dark mausoleum for decades, slowly withering into a desiccated husk. When she turned to look at him, her features momentarily blurred into mist. Percy's blood moved like sap in his veins. For years, he had worried about Annabeth dying. When you're a demigod, that goes with the territory. Most half-bloods don't live long. You always knew that the next monster you fought could be your last. But seeing Annabeth like this was too painful. He'd rather stand in the River Phlegethon, or get attacked by Arai, or be trampled by giants.
Oh, gods, Annabeth sobbed. Percy, the way you look.
Percy studied his arms. All he saw were blobs of white mist, but he guessed that to Annabeth he looked like a corpse. He took a few steps, though it was difficult. His body felt insubstantial, like he was made of helium and cotton candy.
I've looked better, he decided. I can't move very well, but I'm all right.
Aklis clucked.
Oh, you're definitely not all right.
Percy frowned.
But we'll pass unseen now? We can get to the doors of death?
Well, perhaps you could, the goddess said. If you lived that long, which you won't.
Aklis spread her gnarled fingers. More plants bloomed along the edge of the pit. Hemlock, nightshade, and oleander spreading toward Percy's feet like a deadly carpet.
The death mist is not simply a disguise, you see. It is a state of being. I could not bring you this gift unless death followed. True death.
It's a trap,
Annabeth said. The goddess cackled.
Didn't you expect me to betray you?
Yes, Annabeth and Percy said together.
Well, then it was hardly a trap. More of an inevitability. Misery is inevitable. Pain is...
Yeah, Percy growled. Let's get to the fighting.
He drew Riptide, but the blade was made of smoke. When he slashed at Aklis, the sword just floated across her like a gentle breeze. The goddess's ruined mouth split into a grin.
Did I forget to mention? You are only mist now, a shadow before death. Perhaps if you had time, you could learn to control your new form. But you do not have time. Since you cannot touch me, I fear any fight with misery will be quite one-sided.
Her fingernails grew into talons, her jaw unhinged, and her yellow teeth elongated into fangs. Chapter 48. Percy. Aklis lunged at Percy, and for a split second he thought, well, hey, I'm just smoke. She can't touch me, right? He imagined the fates up in Olympus laughing at his wishful thinking. LOL, noob. The goddess's claws raked across his chest and stung like boiling water. Percy stumbled backward, but he wasn't used to being smoky. His legs moved too slowly. His arms felt like tissue paper. In desperation, he threw his backpack at her, thinking maybe it would turn solid when it left his hand, but no such luck. It fell with a soft thud. Aklis snarled, crouching to spring. She would have bitten Percy's face off if Annabeth hadn't charged and screamed, "Hey!" right in the goddess's ear. Aklis flinched, turning toward the sound. She lashed out at Annabeth, but Annabeth was better at moving than Percy. Maybe she wasn't feeling as smoky, or maybe she'd just had more combat training. She'd been at Camp Half-Blood since she was 7. Probably she'd had classes Percy never got, like how to fight while partially made of smoke. Annabeth dove straight between the goddess's legs and somersaulted to her feet. Aklis turned and attacked, but Annabeth dodged again, like a matador. Percy was so stunned, he lost a few precious seconds. He stared at corpse Annabeth, shrouded in mist but moving as fast and confidently as ever. Then it occurred to him why she was doing this. To buy them time, which meant Percy needed to help. He thought furiously, trying to come up with a way to defeat Misery. How could he fight when he couldn't touch anything? On Aklis's third attack, Annabeth wasn't so lucky. She tried to veer aside, but the goddess grabbed Annabeth's wrist and pulled her hard, sending her sprawling. Before the goddess could pounce, Percy advanced, yelling and waving his sword. He still felt about as solid as a Kleenex, but his anger seemed to help him move faster.
"Hey, Happy!" he yelled.
Aklis spun, dropping Annabeth's arm.
"Happy?" she demanded.
"Yeah."
He ducked as she swiped at his head.
"You're downright cheerful."
"Ah!"
She lunged again, but she was off balance. Percy sidestepped and backed away, leading the goddess farther from Annabeth.
"Pleasant," he called.
"Delightful."
The goddess snarled and winced. She stumbled after Percy. Each compliment seemed to hit her like sand in the face.
"I will kill you slowly," she growled,
her eyes and nose watering, blood dripping from her cheeks.
"I will cut you into pieces as a sacrifice tonight."
Annabeth struggled to her feet. She started rifling through her pack, no doubt looking for something that might help. Percy wanted to give her more time. She was the brains. Better for him to get attacked while she came up with a brilliant plan.
"Cuddly," Percy yelled. "Fuzzy, warm, and huggable."
Aklis made a growling, choking noise, like a cat having a seizure.
"A slow death," she screamed. "A death from 1,000 poisons."
All around her, poisonous plants grew and burst like overfilled balloons. Green and white sap trickled out, collecting into pools, and began flowing across the ground toward Percy. The sweet-smelling fumes made his head feel wobbly.
"Percy!"
Annabeth's voice sounded far away.
Hey, Miss Wonderful, Cheerful, Grins, over here!"
But the goddess of misery was now fixated on Percy. He tried to retreat again. Unfortunately, the poison ichor was flowing all around him now, making the ground steam and the air burn. Percy found himself stuck on an island of dust not much bigger than a shield. A few yards away, his backpack smoked and dissolved into a puddle of goo. Percy had nowhere to go. He fell to one knee. He wanted to tell Annabeth to run, but he couldn't speak. His throat was as dry as dead leaves. He wished there were water in Tartarus, some nice pool he could jump into to heal himself, or maybe a river he could control. He'd settle for a bottle of Avion.
"You will feed the eternal darkness," Aklis said. "You will die in the arms of night."
He was dimly aware of Annabeth shouting, throwing random pieces of dragon jerky at the goddess. The white-green poison kept pooling,
little streams trickling from the plants as the venomous lake around him got wider and wider. Lake, he thought. Streams. Water. Probably it was just his brain getting fried from poison fumes, but he croaked out a laugh. Poison was liquid. If it moved like water, it must be partially water. He remembered some science lecture about the human body being mostly water. He remembered extracting water from Jason's lungs back in Rome. If he could control that, then why not other liquids? It was a crazy idea. Poseidon was the god of the sea, not of every liquid everywhere. Then again, Tartarus had its own rules. Fire was drinkable. The ground was the body of a dark god. The air was acid, and demigods could be turned into smoky corpses. So why not try? He had nothing left to lose. He glared at the poison flood encroaching from all sides. He concentrated so hard that something inside him cracked, as if a crystal ball had shattered in his stomach. Warmth flowed through him. The poison tide stopped. The fumes blew away from him, back toward the goddess. The lake of poison rolled toward her in tiny waves and rivulets. Aklis shrieked,
"What is this?"
"Poison," Percy said. "That's your specialty, right?" He stood, his anger growing hotter in his gut. As the flood of venom rolled toward the goddess, the fumes began to make her cough. Her eyes watered even worse. Oh, good, Percy thought. More water. Percy imagined her nose and throat filling with her own tears. Aklis gagged. The tide of venom reached her feet, sizzling like droplets on a hot iron. She wailed and stumbled back.
"Percy!"
Annabeth called. She'd retreated to the edge of the cliff, even though the poison wasn't after her. She sounded terrified. It took Percy a moment to realize she was terrified of him.
"Stop!"
she pleaded, her voice hoarse. He didn't want to stop. He wanted to choke this goddess. He wanted to watch her drown in her own poison. He wanted to see just how much misery could take.
"Percy, please!"
Annabeth's face was still pale and corpse-like, but her eyes were the same as always. The anguish in them made Percy's anger fade. He turned to the goddess. He willed the poison to recede, creating a small path of retreat along the edge of the cliff.
"Leave!"
he bellowed. For an emaciated ghoul, Aklis could run pretty fast when she wanted to. She scrambled along the path, fell on her face, and got up again, wailing as she sped into the dark. As soon as she was gone, the pools of poison evaporated. The plants withered to dust and blew away. Annabeth stumbled toward him. She looked like a corpse wreathed in smoke, but she felt solid enough when she gripped his arms.
"Percy, please don't ever..."
Her voice broke in a sob.
"Some things aren't meant to be controlled. Please."
His whole body tingled with power, but the anger was subsiding. The broken glass inside him was beginning to smooth at the edges.
"Yeah," he said. "Yeah, okay."
"We have to get away from this cliff," Annabeth said. "If Aklis brought us here as some kind of sacrifice..."
Percy tried to think. He was getting used to moving with the death mist around him. He felt more solid, more like himself. But his mind still felt stuffed with cotton.
"She said something about feeding us to the night," he remembered. "What was that about?"
The temperature dropped. The abyss before them seemed to exhale. Percy grabbed Annabeth and backed away from the edge as a presence emerged from the void. A form so vast and shadowy, he felt like he understood the concept of dark for the first time.
"I imagine," said the darkness in a feminine voice as